Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Gift of Gaming podcast. And on this week's episode, I sat down with Craig the Critical Nolan to watch Secret Levels, so you don't have to. All right, what's up? It's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by Craig the Critical Nolan. And Craig, I did mention to people at the start of the intro there that they don't have to watch Secret Levels, but they should watch Secret Levels.
I mean, they should
Levels.
Definitely watch them. You
know? As a little bit of a warning
But
thing,
if you're really lazy, you can just listen to us talk really about it for a longer amount of time.
Than the episode is actually on for, yeah. But before we get into all that, Craig, the last time I spoke to you on the podcast would have been pre-Game Awards, where Metaphor ReFantazio scooped up a good few there.
Yeah, crazy.
Are you still playing Metaphor?
No, I got to the very, very end. And what happened was, it's very unlike Persona 5 in that in Persona 5, you don't have enough time to do everything. Like, there's always something you can't do. But in Metaphor, at the very end of the game, they just give you a month to do whatever you want before the final boss. And I had completed every single quest and side quest. And now I have 8 days left. But part of me doesn't want to just go into the inn and hit end day eight times in a row. So I just stopped playing because I don't know what to do.
See, I haven't finished it.
I haven't finished it because I don't know. Like, maybe there is something else I can do and I don't know. And I'm afraid to lose that.
Yeah.
So I'm in this kind of weird state now where I can't complete the game because I have nothing left to do and I don't want to end the day like an idiot, you know?
Yeah. Just sit around.
Plus, that kind of annoyed me. Like, just that. It ran that way, you know? Like, the game should have had maybe 2 weeks less or something. Like, you shouldn't be able to do everything.
Do you reckon that's a part that they might have taken from Persona that people would have complained about, the fact that you can't do everything?
I mean, it's possible because, I mean, to ask someone to do a complete run-through twice just to 100% the game, but, I mean, like, I'm not one of these, like, trophy-hungry motherfuckers who has to fucking...
raise my hand over here.
Get their platinums. Like, oh, why does the platinum take 200 hours? Because get a life, you know?
Stupid. There's stupid things that you got to do, yeah. So, since you're kind of in this limbo with Metaphor, what are you playing currently?
I am playing it. That was the last kind of game I've played since, other than Smash and Golf, of course, which is just an never-ending cycle.
Just keep doing that, yeah.
But I have moved on to my next thing. Like, I'm not sure what that's going to be. You had the couple of recommendations other people have had, so I'm just kind of on the fence for a little bit while I think about it, because a part of me, based on what we saw yesterday, there's one of those games on that list that I kind of am eager to play now.
Oh, okay. Can I ask what that game is, or will we save it for when we get to the next episode?
I guess we can save it for a little later. I mean, it makes sense.
Okay. I am still considering what games to leave, because this will be the last episode that we record before Christmas. So for those listening wondering what's going to happen on the week of Christmas, I am going to release some of the post shows that we've put in the Patreon just to have over the Christmas holiday. So I won't leave you guys short, you know. And as a New Year's resolution,
a little short.
Yeah. They're not as good as the normal ones, or they're better. Maybe they're better because you've got to pay for them. Yeah, they're better. But yeah, so if you guys are looking for some New Year's resolutions, why not go to patreon.com/thegiftofgaming, and for less than the price of a coffee a month, you can join the Patreon and get loads.
What
of extra
kind of resolution
content.
Would that be?
One to help the old Gift of Gaming podcast resolution, Craig. And I gotta sell this shit myself. Whatever way I can, you know. Yeah. So that's the plan for next week. So this is our last episode before Christmas. So I'm kind of like, God, what games am I going to play for the, you know, I'm kind of working a little bit through Christmas, but I've got some time off in January. I'm like, what am I going to get stuck into? I'm bet into Marvel Midnight Suns.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I was considering. Yeah.
A game I purchased ages ago. I played a little bit at the start of it and just never fell for it. And not to say fell for it, but I just wasn't really in the mood for that kind of game at the time. But I've since come back playing Marvel Rivals online. Got me hooked on kind of just Marvel games again, and playing this was like the perfect remedy, because Marvel Rivals is very, like, you know, it's a hero shooter, so I'm not very good at those. It's been fun, but I get my ass kicked more times than I don't, so it's kind of like, oh man, I'm a bit sad playing this game. But then I just turn over to Marvel Midnight Suns, and it's good, man. It's good, like, it's good humor, like a couple of wisecracking jokes, a classic Tony Stark playing as Iron Man. I'm waiting for, like, I've gotten a good selection of heroes to use in it so far, but none of the ones that I really want. Like, the cover has like Captain America Patrick and Wolverine and Sean, and I'm like, they're the people I want on my fucking team. Yeah. Whereas right now I've got like Doctor Strange, Magic. Magic's pretty cool. Doctor Strange, Magic, and
who the hell's Magic?
Magic is she has this sword and she's got the ability to open portals. I think she's an X-Men previously.
What?
Yeah.
Never heard of her.
M-A-G-I-K. So not the traditional spelling of Magic. Yeah. She's pretty cool in this. But yeah, really enjoying that. But like that's kind of like my fun side game. But there's a game I'm thinking like, what game can I get stuck into?
Yeah.
And I think Ghost of Tsushima. I think it's time.
You haven't played that at all, have you?
I played the first 2 hours of it again, like 2 years ago or something like that. And
you have the PS Plus now, right? The PS Pro, PS5 Pro.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say that
the enhanced edition. Yeah. I think the problem that I had was I tried to be real cool about it, and I think I tried to play it in all of it in black and white because you can do.
You shouldn't do that.
No, because I saw that because I was watching. I'm like, oh, this is kind of boring. But then I saw the screenshots later on of like these amazing, you know, colored fields. The open world looks just beautiful.
I did the same, and I went Japanese, and within 20 minutes, I was like, this is terrible.
Color and English, please.
Yes. Like, I hate when a game does the whole like dialogue option, but then doesn't give you the subtitles for characters that are in the distance talking. It'll only give you the characters that are talking directly to you. So you're always missing the little tidbits of information that the surrounding characters are saying. Yeah. And then I'm like, well, I can't not have that, so I have to go English.
Yeah, it's so immersive because, you know, playing through Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I played it through in English, but my brother Graham's playing through it at the minute, and I was down and I watched him play through the Temple of the Ancients, but he's playing in Japanese because he was like, no, I couldn't
face. And I bet he's missing loads of information.
But it's funny, it's not even that he's missing loads of information, it's that bit in the battle, you know, when you're in the middle of a fight and people are shouting things when they pull off moves and everything like that, that I think really gets me revved up when I'm playing the game. Yeah. That I just don't really get the same. I mean, they're shouting in Japanese and it's cool, but I'm like, oh, but I'm not understanding what they're saying, so I don't know if he's getting the same out of the game that I would have gotten.
It probably isn't even coming up on the bottom in text at all.
No, you just hear them. There's no, that's it, there's no actual subtitles.
So what's the point? Like, yeah. You know?
And I think the same thing happened in Final Fantasy 15. I think I tried playing through that in Japanese originally, and then they were saying loads of things as they were just walking around the open world, but that wasn't being subtitled.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, this seems like the core of the game almost. It's like, you know,
those are the best parts of Final Fantasy 15. The little...
The road trip romance, So I won't be doing that, I think. Yeah, maybe Ghost of Tsushima, I'll play in full color and in English over the Christmas.
It's also a really, really good game. Too long, but deadly. If you just keep the side quest to maybe... Like, don't try and clear everything, because I tried to clear the game twice. I didn't restart ever. I played halfway through the game, and then 2 years later, I picked it up and started playing again, and I still couldn't get to the end without being... So I got burned out twice.
Twice, okay.
Just because there's a lot of repetition. There's just so much content, you know? But the first, 20 hours, it was amazing, and then I was just getting a little tired. Yeah. But then that second 20 hours was amazing.
Well, I got tired. Oh, that's fair. Before we get on to the actual episode, announcements for the Game Awards, you know, you looked at it, you've seen a few since.
Didn't really look at it, you know, I don't care about any of that. I trust my own opinion and I don't give a fuck about anyone else.
But in terms of the announcements,
sorry, I thought you meant the actual rewards themselves. No, here's me being all like miserable over here because Final Fantasy didn't win. Like, fuck those guys.
They won the score at least, which is something. I mean, it would have been a
travesty.
Didn't
win Best RPG. I know, that's absolutely insane. Yeah.
Metaphor got that one somehow. I don't get it. But anyway. But in terms of the announcements, like, we saw things like Witcher 4 and like the new one coming from Shadow of the Colossus. Is there anything that got you excited from any of the announcements that you would have seen?
The Witcher 4, I mean, like, I'd imagine that's good. I just hope it's not, you know, pushed by a certain narrative, like, you know.
Okay.
I just want a lot of Geralt, you know. I want that guy humor. It's a guy game. Like, if you interview with 100 people and be like, hey, you play The Witcher, I'd say 99 of them would be men, like, you know, maybe less, slightly less, but not by a lot, you know?
And I think he's such a great character, like, so humorous in his own way, that he will be a big miss.
Like, having a female lead will just completely, it won't feel like the same franchise. Know, it'll have to change in so many different
ways. I think we got that by, like, because I think they said like the new saga begins or whatever, so I guess they are taking it in a bit of a different route. But yeah, I think I will miss that too. I mean, I only played and I never finished The Witcher 3, but even for the bits that I did, I was like, I do enjoy Geralt's humor.
He's such a great character.
I think he will be missed. Be interesting to see if he's like an important NPC or anything, not an NPC, but like if he's this person that, like, you know, comes along along with you on quests and things like that, you still get a bit of that Geralt. I can't imagine they would have just shoved him under a rug for the entire game, but you never know. We'll wait and see.
I mean, he could be the Vesemir, whatever that guy's name was, but he wasn't in it enough at all. Like,
yeah,
he's in at the very beginning and
he
the end.
And he was a great character. So I missed him throughout the, like, the middle part of the section as well, because when you're practicing at the, what, I always forget what the Witcher home
Kaer Morhen
is called. Kaer Morhen. When you're practicing there, I like the little back and forth between him and Geralt, you know, so he was a miss. But hopefully he's in it a bit more. Wait and see. I think for myself, I am incredibly excited for... just really interested to see what the Intergalactic one from Naughty Dog is. I don't know if you saw that one. It's like a brand new IP, so they're putting The Last of Us on hold for a little while, and they're going for a brand new IP, and you're like a bounty hunter in space. But my
Man, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it's really good. And like, I think Chris had it. Me and Chris were laughing because Chris had a few problems with it, that it's highly sponsored. So like, your spaceship is a Porsche spaceship. The main character, she's wearing like Adidas kicks. Do you know what I mean? Like shoes,
really?
Whatever. So. Yes, that's such a change. But my thing about it is, if that pays the bills so that no one has to crunch or the game doesn't have to be rushed or anything like that, I'm like, okay, maybe just that little. And it's not, it's
Darren, well, we don't live in that world. We all will always live in a world where people will be paid the bare minimum and work the most that they
even
can
if,
get. Like,
even if
all
Porsche,
of that extra money just goes to the people who invested in it. It does, it won't go to anyone associated with making the game.
I like
that.
That's
how the world works.
Yeah, I know, right? How naive of me. But
it's
speaking
profits and
speaking
that's it.
Of things that were made, we should probably get on to today's episode, which for people who don't know is about Secret Levels, the Amazon TV show that has as of now a full season out, 15 episodes, all based on individual video game stories. We watched 6 of them last night, Craig, so it's pretty fresh in our minds. Initially, without going into any episode in particular, did you enjoy what you saw?
I thought it was a very good experience. The quality of each video
so
we watched
good.
was way up. It's like that show Love, Death and Robots, I think it's called, and it's like just short films, but like the quality and like the budget in each one is amazing. Like these are done by people who cared a lot, like, you know, and like put everything into them, and I guess that's why they're so short, but like, they're absolutely stunning. And if you're a fan of the game they came from, you'll definitely want to check it out.
Yeah, and I think that was the cool thing. I wanted to wait because they released 8 episodes last week, and the Mega Man one wasn't there. Just from the trailer, the Mega Man one is the one I was most excited about, just because I was like...
Was it really?
It was. It just in terms of...
I would think that that was probably my least favorite.
Because it's just a series, and I think having Daniel on the podcast in times gone by and talking to him generally, like, Mega Man is one of his favorite franchises. And I was like, I just never got it. I just didn't really understand it. So I was keen to see it, to be like, is it something that could, you know, turn me to be like, oh, actually, Mega Man could be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to wait. So we waited until this week when the rest of the episodes were released and the Mega Man one came out. I think that's where we should start. So, episode 10, Mega Man, the episode is called Start. So, this is just a bit of a blurb. All these blurbs are coming from IGN by Matt Perslow. So, just credit there. But this is the Start. The episode is based on the 1987 classic Mega Man and, as its name suggests, acts as something of an origin story for the game's main character. Across one of the Secret Level's shortest episodes, we see Rock, a boy-like robot, rise from being Dr. Light's lab assistant to become the protector of the city, Mega Man. I was so blown... Like it is... I mean, it's the shortest... I think it's like 5.5 minutes long is this episode.
It's so short, but like, what visually, it's stunning every second of it. Like.
Yeah, and what a fucking amazing origin story. Like, that's the thing. It gave me everything I wanted to, and that, like, when it finished, I was like, I hate that it stopped here, and I kind of want to know the Mega Man lore now because of what... it was only 5 minutes, but kind of a lot happened in that short space of time that I was like, damn, I kind of want to...
You had the full story in that, like... In that 5 minutes, so like when it was ending, I was like, "Yeah, there's no way they could even go from there."
Yeah,
like for me, it was over because you don't even know what the world would look like. I don't think they had an idea.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's one of those cases where they've like, "No, this is it. Now go play the game."
Yeah, that was it. It felt like a real like opener to a video game where you're. But yeah, so basically the episode. I mean, for these, like that's the synopsis. But for these episodes, if you haven't seen any Secret Levels and you want to do kind of like a watch along and listen to what me and Craig thought, like pause the podcast here, go watch the Mega Man episode and get back on, and we'll go through the rest of them. But for me, it was such a cool little introduction. I mean, I know from more so from Smash Brothers with the assist trophies or Mega Man's Ultimate that I can see that all these Mega Man characters, like the Bomberman and the different versions and stuff like that. So when I saw, you know, obviously Dr. Light's creations have been taken over by Wily and they're destroying Megatown or whatever the fuck it's called, who knows. And he's trying to find a way to, like, he just keeps sending robots out to try and
stop them.
They always get get taken control of, and then this one Bomberman, I don't think it's called Bomberman, but
I don't
the
think
bomber.
So, though.
Yeah, this is probably an IP issue there. But this bomb man or whatever it's called is like, okay, this is the next one we're gonna send out. So Dr. Light's telling, you know, Rock to go and prepare this thing, and he brings it out and hopefully puts this thing into it to stop it from getting taken over. But before that gets finalized, this little kind of spider robot comes in and takes it over, and Mega Man's got, or Rock's got to fight it as Mega Man. It's the first time you kind of see him use his, because he's just dressed as a kid. He's not in the classic Mega Man suit. He's just like a kid who's like a lab assistant or whatever.
But he can detach his hands and put things in their place. That's
and the animation just for that just looks so good. Like, it was such a joy to watch. Everything that was happening was such a joy to watch. But yeah, so he freezes the bomb thing when it goes against him. He's able to stop. Another one of those critters jumps on his head and tries to take him over, but he's able to stop it. And then Dr. Light realizes, hang on, I thought you were just a helper at the lab, but maybe you could be the key to saving this. And then it's, you get a cool little montage.
But just like, because, I mean, like the kid, Wily goes on, or not Wily, Dr. Light goes on about how, no, we need these big massive robots, but like the weapons that he has, like that little tiny ice thing, like that essentially destroys the robot instantly because it freezes his arm and he just blows up.
Yeah.
But that sequence looked amazingly so good. And even Niall pointed out the use of the smoke in that scene, like just as he was falling over, and as soon as he hits the ground, you can't see a thing because it sends an absolute wall of smoke at Mega Man, and you just can't see anything, and it's all that like dust and like he's running through, and just seeing that in animation, it really takes it beyond the video game because you're getting all these particle effects and things that just the game could never do, like, you know.
And it was one of those, like, I'd watch it, and I think almost with every episode that we're going to talk about, I'd watch a series on fucking all of these almost. You know,
but they could never be done because it would cost millions
to get them to produce that level of quality. But yeah, I think because you get a montage then of him getting his Mega Man suit, and then Dr. Light throws him the helmet,
with
and
the
he,
music coming on as well for all the fanboys.
Yeah, so good. And then he teleports him into the city where he puts on the hat, and then the episode ends. Like, it cuts there. And such a great place to cut it. But I was sitting there being like, oh, fuck, I wanted to see him get in and get involved for a little while. But it made me think, like, I could consider, and I must ask Daniel what he'd recommend, but like just to play a Mega Man, because I know in terms of the game-wise, maybe they wouldn't be the most enjoyable so many years later now, but I'm kind of interested in the lore. I'm kind of interested in, like, because I never knew anything about Mega Man.
I bet there's fuck all.
Just loads of
you
robots.
You probably got all of it in that little...
Yeah.
I'm joking. I'm sure there's lots of Mega Man lore.
But yeah, so that was the Mega Man one. Great.
Great opener.
Yeah. We'll go into one, Craig, that I think you really enjoyed. This was episode 4, Unreal Tournament.
Oh,
the episode was known
as
Zan. So Zan is set in the Unreal Tournament universe, and much like the previous episode, The Once and Future King, we didn't actually see them. It acts as a prequel to events that take place in the original video games. During this short, we witness a retelling of the origins of the Unreal Tournament, which was designed to put a stop to an AI uprising. You and me both love this episode just because of the concept. It's literally like
and
a gladiator.
And just because the references to the game and like every few seconds when you hear people dying and things like that, you know, like
first,
double kill,
first blood,
revenge, and all that type of stuff. Like that just immediately would trigger a flashback in my mind to my childhood playing. And it was just littered with that type of stuff. Like, and then the layout of the levels and things like that. I was like, oh yeah, they were real like labyrinth focused and things like that, you know, and you're just like...
and it's cool because you get to see like the origins of the AI robot uprising.
But I don't really remember that AI robots in Unreal Tournament, the actual video game. So I don't even really know what was going on
there. Yeah, no, I think the tournament, if my understanding is correct, and if I'm wrong, just email us at thegiftofgamingpodcast@gmail.com and tell me I'm wrong. But I think the story of it is that the Unreal Tournament was set up to put down an AI resistance, but went on to continue being the Unreal Tournament. So I think that's just the lore of it, as opposed to, because I don't remember fighting robots either in that game. I think it was just humans versus different factions of humans
that's
fighting each
thought,
other.
Yeah.
In my memory,
there were some robots in there just as guards.
Yeah.
And shit,
so I think that's kind of, it was just showing you the origins of how the tournament was established. But like the beginning of it, where it's kind of showing why the robots turned because all of his robot friends were just getting the shit kicked out of them by humans. I was like, oh, this is pretty sad. But when it got to the actual tournament bit, because we got to see maybe 4 or 5 tournaments, and I think the concept was that sometimes the robots won, but when they lost, the main robot that was kind of leading this rebellion, his memory would just get switched to another robot and he'd go into the next round knowing more.
And throughout the battles, you always see him taking note of like why they lost or what the humans did to win and things like that. So with every single battle, he like makes the adjustments and like wins next time. It's very similar to The Incredibles, you know, like that machine that,
yes,
like,
that learns the hero
and
stuff.
Then, like,
yes,
defeats the heroes the next time. And this robot is doing that with his whole team. But eventually the team start to almost become somewhat humanized themselves around him and things like that. So they start protecting him and stuff like that. So it's not just the one that has this kind of humanity within him.
Yeah,
like
he teaches the rest of the robots.
And like the other robots start to kind of feel that way as well.
But Yumi was saying, because it's just such a satisfying cycle to just watch, like, you know, here's a team of like four kind of mutant guys versus five mutant guys versus a team of five robots. Off you go and watch it. And we watched it and it was like, oh, that was interesting. And we got to watch the next one with like the normal humans, the next one with the whatever. I was like, man, I could watch again, like Mega Man, but almost in kind of a more of a, like, almost like a YouTube series or something like that. I'd watch just this. And I don't mean like people playing it live. I mean just like episodes of it, because it was so cool. Like the choreography and some of the moments were great.
There were some really good fight sequences, you know, like some long distance with sniper rifles, some in corridors, indoors where you couldn't really see. And then all of a sudden they take out shotguns. Like it changed setting quite a lot, like within the levels, like, you know, so they had to fight in loads of different ways and it all looked very visually appealing.
And what I loved about it was that it made me miss, because I mean, the closest thing that I would have played a lot of multiplayer of in those kind of arena based things aside from like your Call of Duty would have been Halo, but watching that it really made me want to play those kind of games
like
again,
3,
like if I had all my mates again just to sit back and play, like, you know, 5v5 whatever else in that kind of scenario. I was like, god, this game, this watching this Unreal Tournament episode really makes me want to play that style of game, which kind of isn't, because it's all battle royales and things now more so than, or like the classic call, you know.
I'd love to see a kind of a ranking system, and like, you know, like the TV show is about the best teams trying to improve themselves in the ranks, you know, type of thing. I mean, there's not enough shows based on that concept. There's a few, but not enough good ones, you know?
Like, one of the things I really enjoyed, it was only a small part of it, but Legend of Korra, it took me a while to get into against
the Fire Ferrets.
Yeah.
In pro bending. But I mean, like, they could have had the entire show just based on
pro
that.
Pro bending.
Like,
I would have
loved it.
Because I wasn't so... It took me... Because, I mean, I loved Aang, the Legend of Aang or whatever else. Legend of Korra, I was like, oh, doesn't have the same feeling as Aang, but it was the pro bending that got me hooked on that series. And it is. It's a phenomenal series. I didn't give it enough credit in my first watch, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was the pro bending thing. I could just watch these teams play pro bending. And it was the same with this Unreal Tournament thing. Is like, I'm kind of attached now to all these teams. In this short, like, 15, 16 minute long episode, I want the robots to win. But at the same time, like, I suppose the villains, that guy who was kind of controlling the tournament to make sure that the robots lost, to put them down, he ended up having to go against the robots in the final round. And I was kind of, like, in a way, kind of rooting for him, because he was like...
He was like some captain with a sniper. Yeah, he was a bit of a badass.
He was a bit of a badass, but he knew something was wrong. And the one was like, no, just give me my damn show, whatever. It was very Hunger Games almost. Like, you know, they demanded too much and the Rebellion won type thing. But no, it was a very, very cool episode. And I think when it finished and, it, you know, credits rolled, you and me were like, oh, I could watch so much more of just that show.
Just instant quick action, like, you know.
Yeah. We went, and then this is in no particular order, but I'll read them out here. We then watch episode 2, which is based on Sifu, and the episode was called It Takes a Life. So this is based on Sifu, the 2022 action game from developer Slow Clap. Set in China, the game follows the journey of a man seeking revenge for the death of his father. Unlike most episodes of Secret Level, It Takes a Life actually takes place within the storyline of its source material. The fight scenes are a recreation of Sifu's second level, The Club.
That makes sense. It did seem very... Like, because the Unreal Tournament thing, like you said, you know, was AI instead of actual people. So they have to differentiate it.
Yeah,
enough,
a little bit.
Whereas
this
seemed very much exactly the game it's taken from.
But I think it's hard to, I don't know how you could have, when we get to the Pac-Man episode, which was wild, we'll talk about that one at the end. But
that's drastically different.
Yeah, but I don't think you could have deviated too far from Sifu as a story because that's what he's there for, like to get his revenge or whatever. But it was such a cool concept, done in the same style that the game is in, like the same art style, which is another thing that I found quite impressive, because Unreal Tournament was just heavily realistic, like CGI realistic, but looked great. Mega Man was that real kind of, I wouldn't say cute, but it had, Gigantor or those kind of Astro Boy, you know, those kind of old anime styles. It was like a CGI version of that, which is quite cool. It was very different. And then this was just in the style of the Sifu game, which I thought was really cool as well. But a great storyline, and I've watched a lot of Sifu, never played it. I've always considered buying it, but I was like, I don't really know if it's my thing. But I haven't watched a lot of it, and people talk about how quickly they can get to the end or how young their character is by the time.
Is it a roguelike? Is it?
No, I, I don't think it's necessarily a rogue. Like, I think like you just die and you can respawn from when you are, but okay. You only got a certain amount of lives because you get older, and then if you don't do it by the time you're ancient, you just, it's game over type thing.
And so a lot wants of to look young and pretty at the end.
Yeah, it's like how early can I finish this game in my character's life cycle? But I thought it was a cool concept, and it was a really cool idea in the, like, he's in this section where he's trying to get into the club, I think.
Well, before you do that, like, it starts off brilliantly in the rain and the tarp, and it neon, has that kind of neon
Tokyo
sci-fi
type thing.
Yeah, like it looks like it's straight out of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And he's eating food from the stalls on the busy street. You know, I would love to that experience that once in my life, eating from a food vendor in front of the busiest street,
yeah,
you know, with the tarp over my head and the rain
neon
coming
lights,
down,
yeah.
And that's how it starts off, just about 60 seconds 90 seconds of that, and I'm like, oh, it's
and
setting
it, and it was a really good episode in terms of full circle, because that's how the episode kind of closes as well, which is really clever. But him, you know, he's the death of, and it's good how it introduces us to it, because he seems young enough, and you get the flashback of his father being killed. She's like, oh, he's been on this revenge path training for like 16-17 years maybe at this stage. But then he goes into this thing, into the club, and he has to cross this bridge to get to where the main character is, and he gets killed so many times. Like, so many times. What's really cool is every time he gets killed, he goes into this kind of like underworld type scenario, and he can watch kind of what happened. Oh, so I slipped on blood here, that's how I died. So then he just tries to, you know, correct that the next time he goes in. But by the time he crosses the bridge, like, he's an old dude. So I'm like, like, his parents...
He definitely should have had a better plan.
Yeah. He's just going in like full, like, he just saw red mist and was going in for the kill. I was like, did this father die like a week ago? Like, has he just aged really, really quickly, like, type thing? I just have no idea of the concept of time, of how long between his father dying to this point, because it shows him aging so quickly.
I imagine
the
death takes a year off or something, right? There has to be at least a heavy consequence.
But it was a cool concept for the game. I really enjoyed that in the game. But it was also like, it was just cool to watch an episode on
it.
It
was cool
to
watch, but I couldn't understand how he was coming back. Did he just spawn?
He just woke up. He just stood up from where he was.
But like, was he healed? Like, what was happening to his body in between?
He healed, but his facial features, his body was older.
Were we seeing him heal? I couldn't remember.
No. The thing was, you saw him get the
shit
kicked out of
him. I was trying to figure out what was happening, and I was just like, wait a minute, is he just like teleporting back to life?
No, I think wherever,
like,
his
healing
body,
like Wolverine and then getting old, or like, because it's not showing.
No, it doesn't. There's one point where it shows it, where he gets up and he's much older, but he actually, they like beat the crap out of him while he's on the ground, and then they walk away, and then it shows him realizing how he lost, and then he just gets up from where he was, and they all turn back around, so it's almost instantaneous. So like, in that space of time, like, he was in there maybe getting through that club and getting to your man over the course of an hour, but he aged like 40-50 years in that space of time. So cool concept. I was like,
and it was visually really cool, like the fighting and choreography. In fact, every episode had great fighting and great choreography, but that one in particular just had close quarters samurai action type shit,
just real kind of like the hand-to-hand combat scenes were quite good. The only thing I will say about it was is that I now have no need to play the game. I feel like I've gotten
it feels like it was the whole game, right?
just in fast forward essentially. Like, you know, but really, really cool. The next one I'll go on to was the very first episode of Secret Levels. This is Dungeons and Dragons The Queen's Cradle. So The Queen's Cradle is based on Dungeons & Dragons, the 50-year-old tabletop RPG that created the world in which Baldur's Gate 3 is set. As is typical of D&D's fantasy adventures, the story follows a questing party of diverse characters. Mora, a mini-giant paladin. Tali, a gnome wizard. Luzum, a dwarf monk. And Eokal, an orc druid. Their mission is to save Solon, a young man covered in mysterious tattoos from whom the party rescues from the cult of the dragon. What I love about this is, even just reading this, it feels like the introduction thing for like us playing a game of D&D. Like,
it was a classic D&D just set up right from the get-go. This is probably the one though I liked the least. I just felt it was the most generic, especially in terms of a D&D story. I thought this is the simplest one they could possibly think of that like has action, just because the characters are just surrounded by bad guys just immediately. Yeah. And like the dragon's lair is right there, even though they save this kid and it's like, we need to get him to the dragon. Where is he? He's right there.
Right over there. This takes
like,
no time.
There was
all
no transitions or anything. But I mean, these are so short, they can't really have that. But then a lot of the characters were just kind of, you know, their generic powers and things like that. I was like, I'd like to see a little bit more than your classic gnome and your classic, you know, wizard and stuff.
The one
like
thing
that,
the one thing that I did like, and again, it was, you know, we'd seen it with a bit of Sifu anyway, so maybe we were tired a bit at the martial arts, but it was cool to see a dwarf monk. Because the dwarf character was just a monk in it. Like, so he was just fighting with his fists, which I don't really see much of. Even in, like, Vox Machina, the animated TV show, I don't think there's a monk on that team. They're all the kind of the classic. The monk's kind of like the forgotten D&D role almost. Yeah.
They don't get used quite often. Yeah.
So there was lots of cool, like, I mean, visually there was lots of cool bits. You're right, the kind of...
But I mean, the girl, like, she just spends the entire fight trying to use her fire, and the bad guy uses his ice powers to just stop her.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he's dealt with, like, she just obliterates everything, instantly.
With fire.
I'm just like, really? You couldn't do that the whole time?
You know,
it was... classic irritation, but like it looked great.
Yeah.
And that villain I spoke of, the guy, he was on like a flying beast and he had kind of zombie ice power. He's almost like a White Walker or something like that. He was pretty cool.
Yeah. And the dragon bit was quite cool as well, because they bring this, when they get there, they bring Solomon to the dragon, and he's like, oh, I'll lift this curse from you. But it was all part of the Cult of the Dragon's plan, because the curse was essentially what would turn that dragon into Tiamat. It was fun. I enjoyed watching it because it had all of the D&D tropes in it. You know, we got that that final battle of like the party standing in a line ready to fight off against the big bad boss.
I'd assume that like... then if you go from there, your video game begins and it's like 3 years later and that party are dead. There's no way they got out of there.
Your job is to get a party to go back and maybe take on Tiamat again. That's the end game. Yeah, that's a good shout.
Or maybe one of them survives, you know, like, and that's kind of like, oh my God, he's the guy from the intro. The rest got absolutely obliterated.
You know, it was cool. And like, I think you said, it looked amazing. And I think I agree with you. And as a storyline goes, probably of the ones that we watched, the least exciting or the least unique. But I could watch CGI'd. I mean,
I could too, but I mean, if you compare it to, because it seems like the type of thing we've seen a lot of already, with Baldur's Gate 3, it's similar to that intro, but even the Baldur's Gate 3 intro was far more intriguing, I thought.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot more going on with mind flayers and things. I was like, wow, this is different, but a dragon.
We've all seen a dragon, Lord of the Rings, we've all been there,
let's go to the dragon, let's fight the dragon. I'm just like, it's classic.
The one thing that I did, because we played a lot of D&D campaigns, and there was lots of, when I was watching that, I was like, man, if only some of our bits from our D&D campaigns could have been made into amazing CGI. I think of that moment where you guys were in like the parallel worlds and you had to fight on that massive bridge against some of the big bad enemy guys, like a CGI thing where you're both in the different worlds and you merge right at the end to like fight together. I was like, oh, that should be so cool, like, you know,
very, very good.
If only I had the millions to give Tim Miller and his Blur Studio to make that for me.
It'd
like
be so,
you know?
Cool, man.
Oh man, it'd be so good.
Anyway, what were you on there?
Back to the episode. The next one that we watched was, this is the second last one that we watched, and we waited for Niall because me and him played through Warhammer 40k. So this one was episode 5, Warhammer 40k, and They Shall Know No Fear. So this episode is a story set in the Warhammer 40k universe. This makes it the second secret level episode to be based on a tabletop game, but this short also acts as a companion piece to the recently released Space Marine 2 video game. Taking place after SM2's campaign, this episode sees Lieutenant Titus working as part of an elite Blade Guard team on a mission to eliminate an agent of chaos, demons who pose the greatest threat to humanity. Continuing Secret Level's ongoing theme of respawns and rebirth, the story explores how Space Marines are created by breaking down children and rebuilding them into fearless warriors. This episode TV looked unfucking believable.
Just because like there's so much darkness and OLED blacks look amazing, because they just completely cut out the light. But I thought this was my favorite by far as well. Like just it was just therapeutic, like in its visual quality, like, you know, and even like the weapons, they just seem to glow really well.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like you'd see they unleash a load of bullets and then just the gun would you'd see the flames come out of the gun and things like that. And like some parts would be in slow motion, but then other parts would be in like really quickly. So he'd be like swinging his sword really slowly, but then he just uses his fists really abruptly and fast.
Obliterate someone.
The combinations went really well together.
And it's great because what me and Niall were like laughing at while we were watching it, like laughing out of pure joy, what we were seeing was that it's so akin to the video game, because you do this thing where you are a space marine and you're, you know, superhuman, you're massive anyway. People kind of either revere you or fear you. And you're so powerful in the game. Like, I mean, the game's quite hard, but you get these hordes of either humans or creatures or whatever else coming at you. And it felt the same as I was watching that episode, because, like, the gun, as Niall said, like, he's great for all the 40K Warhammer lore, you know? But those handguns have, like, 50 cal bullets. They're fucking, like, massive, like, sniper rifle shots every time you shoot the thing. But in the game, if you shot at a normal human thing as part of a horde, you'd obliterate them. And I loved in the first kind of scene where they're in this valley and they're fighting off against those kind of half human, half monster things that are coming at them. There's a scene where, like, he lifts one up, by its skull, and the camera pans really cleverly behind him, and he just shoots another creature, and it just obliterates, and then he crushes the skull of the other one. And I was like, that's exactly how the game feels when you're playing it. Like, they captured
just
all
no
that so well.
No problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just and ripping them apart.
It was a really cool storyline as well, because again, I think that grimdark vibe, I really enjoyed my time playing Space Marines. Me and I played through the campaign together. It was a lot of fun. I don't know if that's the kind of world I'd like to spend all my time playing video games, because it is really, it's so bleak, man. It's so bleak.
That was the game I was thinking I might pick up.
Yes.
Just because I was like, no, that was badass. Like, but then again, it's not something I'll pay full price for, because I really want to just get it on offer.
Wait till it's on sale. And if you do ever, you know, if you do ever get it, me and I would play through, because it's the interesting thing about it, it's a three player as opposed to a four player.
Odd. Yeah. Especially in the, because in the,
There's four guys in the episode.
So why wouldn't they do it that way?
Yeah, it's just three characters are on this journey together. Yeah, it's unusual, but like, I mean, as a three thing, I don't mind that so much, because I'm like, oh, maybe I'd find it hard to get the fourth person or whatever. But yeah, if you do get it, do let us know, because I'd play through that again. Like, me and Niall, towards the end, we were playing on normal difficulty, but by the end, we'd switched it to kind of like the next level up from normal, and it's so much harder, but so much more enjoyable. Like, everything's like end of the line type thing, you know? But that level as a story, or that episode of Secret Levels, was so good. I was so invested in the storyline, because I mean, maybe from playing the game, I'm a bit more into it. But the fact that they're going to kind of break down this kind of, this demon's lair or whatever it is, and I love it. Like, the Titus, the main guy, is carrying this, like, this chest behind him on a chain for ages. I'm like, oh, what's in that? And the whole time they're fighting off the things, he's always carrying that chain behind him. I'm like, what is that he's carrying? And he goes through like the valley, and then they go deep down into the, like, almost the center of the planet or whatever it is, and it's all dark, and he's carrying this the whole time. And they get to where this cultist place is, and lo and behold, he opens it, and it's like a human cultist, like, yeah, like not know the name, some priest guy. Yeah. And he immediately gets out and starts like praying to this thing to destroy it, and then gets fucking wrecked. And I was like, I love that they weren't scared to like introduce this guy. And immediately he just gets wrecked, and they're fighting killed, for their lives.
He just puts up a force field or something for them for a few seconds, and then they all like fire away.
But I love how the episode ends, or begins and ends, because they say at the beginning of the episode something like, you know, a child that has no fear, you know, what would that be capable of, you know, as a man type thing. And at the very end, Titus and only one of the Space Marines are the only two that are left. And Titus, the other guy's too injured to fight, so Titus kind of walks away to square off to almost an entire army. Mm-hmm. And it dims to the whole, a child with no fear, what could they be capable of? And I was like, oh, damn, he's so cool. Like, this whole world is so cool. But that was a great episode. The longest one, too, like a full 20 minutes.
Full 20 minutes. It felt like grand, like, but it was visually amazing.
So beautiful.
Just
there was
non-stop action as well, like, you know.
Because they did this bit where they went into full darkness or whatever else, and you couldn't see anything. Only when they fired off their guns, the spark of their guns would ignite things. But the creatures that they were fighting had like this luminous blue blood, and as they were killing more of them, just the whole arena just lit up because of this. The luminous
glow,
like, so fucking clever, like, you know.
But then the main kind of villain had the ability to like stop time and just kind of
mess with their heads.
Like, that was really, really cool to see as well.
Yeah, because there's, you can see it from Titus's point of view, where he's looking at the three other Space Marines, and it's all in like time has stopped for him, but he's just seen them drop dead. But in like reality, if we're following the time of this creature, he's going in and he's messing with each of them one by one and essentially killing them. And I was like, this is so, it's so dark. Like, it's so, all that, I mean, the grimdark is, like, as Niall said, it's one of his favorite things. But I was watching that being like, oh, I could get into maybe a bit more of that. I think, like, if they were making it like that, I'd watch the shit out of that, you know. Craig, this brings us on to our last one, which to me was the wildest. I don't know if it was my favorite. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I could not believe what I was watching. So this one is episode 6, Pac-Man. The episode is called Circle. So Circle is perhaps Secret Level's most out there episode, based on the arcade game Pac-Man. Considering the 1980s classic doesn't have much in the way of a story or setting, this short acts as something of a wild reimagining of what the mazes, dots, and ghosts of Pac-Man could represent. So what I will say, if you're listening to this episode and you haven't stopped to watch the episodes, if there's one worth watching to not get spoiled on you, it's this Pac-Man one.
Yeah.
Go watch this episode. It's like 10 or 11 minutes long, and then come back. Craig, it was, I mean, because I didn't tell you which episode we were watching. Yeah,
that helps, because like, even knowing that one's Pac-Man going in would be a spoiler, like, you know,
a little bit. Yeah,
I didn't have that, so the revelation of that Pac-Man symbol, I was like, whoa, shit.
What the fuck,
you know,
am I watching?
Crazy.
Yeah.
But it was very much just a really dark, grim story up until then, like something like an Abe's Odyssey type thing, but even darker than that.
Yeah,
like,
it's just this creature who's, it starts off with this creature who's like born out of like a test tube thing. It opens up and he falls, and he's like, you know, lab grown or whatever. And this like gold ball like hovers up beside him, and it's like, you're hungry, you must eat type thing. and then takes this creature on this journey where they, you know, they grab a sword for the for this creature. The gold orb goes and tells it how it's got to fight all these different things. Now, you must eat. You must eat is the whole thing. Like, you know,
eat, get eat, stronger.
Eat, get strong. And like, and he, you know, this creature's just fighting off all these monsters until it gets to, because that's the thing as well. Like, it's a reimagining of everything. So my assumption is those dots, like all those dots that you eat in Pac-Man, were all these just this monsters? Were all the monsters that this guy, this creature fights?
Yeah.
And then you get to the bit with the ghosts, because you see a ghost maybe at one point in the episode, but you don't get a clear look at it, so you don't know what it's like. But at the end of the episode, the ghosts are these huge, massive hulking monster creatures that are protecting this temple. And what I loved about it was that the guy goes into fighting. He's like, I'm not strong enough. Like, I can't. These things are going to destroy me. And the gold orb, which has like a kind of a female voice as well, it was like, we must eat, and then drills itself into the creature's back, like all bloody and gore, and then completely takes the creature over to try and kill these monsters. Like, it's so horrific. Like,
it's like getting the cherry or something, isn't it? Like the power up.
The power up, essentially.
So
yeah.
Go after them.
Yeah. And then like goes, and like the ghosts, the ghosts are running scared or whatever else. These monsters are running scared, and the creature is trying to fight off from the inside, because it's now Pac-Man is like massive, you know, and it's like horrible and like melting and like trying to eat these creatures. And this creature that helped it the whole way is trying to fight to get out, and it eventually breaks the, you know, I don't know, the possession or whatever else.
30-second power-up time.
Yeah, expires. And then he comes out of it, but with a hole in his chest, because this Pac-Man thing actually like entered his body.
Into the back of him.
And then he dies. But the coolest thing about the whole episode, what makes it so dark, is the little Pac-Man thing goes up to the temple it tried to get into and like hits into it a couple of times as if it's frustrated. And it's like, repeat or whatever, like, you know, rinse repeat type thing.
It's the cool that the creature is just something, I'm not trapped here, you are, or something like that. Some cool final
that's,
words
that
set it off.
Because the creature realizes that the Pac-Man thing was just using it to get out itself, that the Pac-Man thing is trapped. But the darkest bit about it is at the end of the episode, the Pac-Man thing goes back to the ship where we were at the beginning, and the Pac-Man thing has hundreds of pods of creatures to use, and the moment the next one falls out, just like, you must be hungry.
The arcade coins, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But it was such a wild reimagining of Pac-Man that I was like, what is this?
Really cool at reimagining, like, you know? One of the like wildest and most grim that you could do, you know? It makes you think, like.
And what's interesting is, because I don't know if you saw the Game Awards, but there is a new Pac-Man Metroidvania kind of game coming out, but it's of that style. It's the you're running around as one of those creatures, and you have a gold Pac-Man following you around, and then that takes over your body, and you go around as this like horrible mutant Pac-Man. It's a literal game that's coming out. So this episode was obviously made to help promote this, because it was only it was only announced at the Game Awards, and I was like, they are taking Pac-Man
Japers,
in a wild direction, like, you know. So they were the episodes that we watched. There's like, I mean, we watched six. There's 15 in total, so there's still 9 of them out there for us. We watched these six because they're the kind of games that you and I would be most familiar with. Yeah. All those other ones I wouldn't have played and you wouldn't have played. I'm sure they're great episodes, and I will go back to watch the rest.
I definitely will watch more, but those are the ones that just kind of drew our eye in terms of like stuff we've actually put. But even the Pac-Man, all that stuff you were saying about ghosts, I didn't know any of that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because I just don't know. I've never once played Pac-Man.
Really?
Yeah, never. But so when you were like, oh, the dots and that, those are the monsters, I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, he eats dots, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean, I was trying to, you know, I was trying to figure out like all that, as you said, the cherry thing and the power up was very clever, actually, because I didn't realize that's what was probably happening, or that was the reference when she took over the creature's body.
It's a weird reference, right? Like a human being a cherry, you know?
Yeah, I guess so, but the whole thing was wild. Like each dot is like a monster that you have to like fight and kill and
eat.
Yeah,
so loosely based on,
yeah,
on that.
Like,
well,
just again, like, but I mean, quality. I kind of came out of that being like, I need whatever game has no, whatever arcade games exist out there that have no kind of real storyline, give me so much more of that shit. Like, that's so cool, you know?
Yeah.
After we finished watching those episodes, we got chatting about, God, wouldn't it be cool if they did this, and wouldn't it be cool if they did that, and like, what would we most love to see in it? So I thought for the end of this episode, it'd be pretty cool, because you went away and had a bit of a think, and I went away and had a bit of a think of what games we'd most like to see kind of get that treatment. Would you like me to go first, or do you want to go first?
I'll tee one off, just because I feel you'd be I've left you yapping a lot this episode.
My head's so dry.
But the one I thought of first was a kind of a reimagining of F-Zero X, and if people don't know, this is the game Captain Falcon is from, and in those games it's a kind of sci-fi futuristic world where, kind of like say Star Wars Episode 1 Pod Racer, you know, racers kind of race around, and there's 30 of them, and they just kind of have to complete races to become the number one. But Captain Falcon has always been considered a bounty hunter, and I've never ever seen that actually portrayed in the video game itself. So what I was thinking of for this episode is that we have Captain Falcon, and he's walking towards his kind of spaceship, like, which is a racer, and he just has this kind of list of people. We don't know what that's for, and he's just off you go, and then it's like 3, 2, 1, go, and like the episode is an F-Zero race, and the sci-fi futuristic brilliant looking spectacle, and he's zooming around the course smashing into people, killing people, and everyone's, it's kind of a death race, you know, because in F-Zero you kill each other by spinning around in your machine and doing all this, and you just see Captain Falcon, and he has his list, and then he's locking in on specific targets, and he's kind of like boosting towards them and smashing them into the wall and killing them, and you're just kind of like, oh my god, is this some sort of badass like death guy?
Yeah.
And then he's doing that more and more, and he's coming face to face with kind of different characters who are just trying to kind of get away from him, but he's kind of hunting them down. And then towards the end, he realizes, oh, he's nowhere near the end. And this girl, or whatever, Summer or something, I think that's one of the characters in the game, she places first, and a bunch of other people place. And then Captain Falcon himself comes in around fifth, you know?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle of the pack. Yeah. And then she's celebrating. It's, oh, better luck next time, Captain Falcon. And then she receives her prize, like a million
credits.
Sci-fi dollars. But then it cuts to him, and he's going on board the spaceship, and he's just like, beep, 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 beep. And he's caught like 7 or 8 bounties, and it's worth like $200 million or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like he was never trying to win the race.
He was just trying to capture the
capturing
crooks.
The bounties. And then he's kind of like, that girl kind of annoyed me. And then he goes back to compete again, you know, to come first this time.
Just to win the
but
race.
It's supposed to be like he started off as a bounty hunter, just racing for the sake of it. And he's really good at getting the kills. But then he wants to then go back in and compete for real because this one little bitch taunted him this one time.
Yeah,
you know?
He's
oh, better look next time, Falcon. And even though he made way more money than she made,
he's just
he
like,
still wants to go in.
Because that's the kind of character he is.
I think that'd be a kind of cool prequel to set up as though that's his story going in.
And what I love about it is as we were kind of saying, there's some stories out there, or some games out there that really need kind of like a revival, and F-Zero is that thing that
F-Zero is a classic game that needs a revival.
Yeah.
It's so good,
and a modern version of that would be so cool. And I think, you know, I think a lot of games could really I suppose, what's the word, benefit from kind of like appearing on the secret level, like Mega Man.
Yeah.
I watched that being like, fuck, I want to know more about Mega Man. But F-Zero, people
be
like, what
F-Zero
game
be
is
one
this?
Although it's probably owned by Nintendo, but they gave it to Sega, so Nintendo have given it away at times, like, you know, so
yeah.
it's probably one of their more possible ones, especially because it's an IP they clearly don't care about. So, you know, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great idea. One of the ones, an F-Zero, it's so overdue, man, you know. One of the ones I went for, I'm kind of going for ones that I didn't really speak about last night. There is one that I spoke about last night that I actually put in just for fun. But I'll start with the kind of the one I think I'm really interested in, and it's a Jack and Daxter episode.
Cool.
But it's all about more about Dark Jack. So I don't know if you ever played through Jack and Daxter, know the storyline of Jack and Daxter. But basically, he's, you know, Jack is the silent protagonist hero in the first one, the precursor legacy. And, you know, hey, it's a real easy, lovely, happy, go-lucky platforming game or whatever.
Yep.
So I think the episode would start off with the end of Jack and Daxter, where he defeats the end boss and they're all high-fiving each other, and this is great, and you get a couple of quips from Daxter, and isn't that fantastic? And then it comes to their new mission, which is actually, this is in line with, like, this would follow loosely the story of Jack and Daxter, because I'll give this little synopsis that I found online. So Dark Jack is Jack's dark alter ego seen in Jack 2, Jack 3, and for a brief moment during The Lost Frontier. After being subjected to 2 years of dark eco experiments under the Dark Warrior program at the hands of Baron Praxis in Haven City, Jack gained highly destructive powers coupled with high durability and strength, in which he learned to control by help from an oracle in the water slums. Just those lines there, because that's, you come into Jack 2, and those 2 years have already passed. Like, you've traveled to the future, you've gotten caught, and now you're Jack in this new world, and he's got kind of dark powers. I'd love an episode where it's like everything's happy-go-lucky and colorful, and mm-hmm. it's, hey, we've actually need you to do this mission, go through this portal, and it's actually what they didn't realize, it's a time portal, and Jack goes through, and he's immediately arrested because he doesn't recognize anything.
Okay,
and it's this dark story of him, like, just being tested on and experimented on and becoming Dark Jack. As a cool, like, we all know, I mean, Jack and Daxter, the precursor legacy, is this real happy-go-lucky, colorful story. But like, mm-hmm. like in the vein of the Pac-Man, I'd be like, no, let's go for this really wild, kind of dark story. Yeah, so Jack and Dexter was one of the ones I do.
I don't know the story enough to like.
But that's what I like about it is that I'd, even for people who don't, because I didn't like Jack 2 and Jack 3 because it was too far removed from what was the lovely, happy-go-lucky Naughty Dog game that I originally played. But I think as an episode like that, it'd be something that I'd watch and go like, I know that character. Oh, this is a cool, dark story. You know, I think there's a lot to kind of pick from there for people to say, I didn't know that that happened to Jack and Dexter, you know? So yeah. I go dark.
Mm, yeah, it's good. Good.
You got anything, any others?
Okay. I'll go with this one just because I always seem to like, anytime I'm going wild ideas, I always seem to come back to Pokemon. So I'm just thinking it's like, okay, it's a kind of like Oppenheimer style movie. It's a World War II kind of
setting,
you know? And like, it's the space race, and like, everyone's trying to like develop the technology to get to the moon as soon as they can. And one organization that are doing it are Team Rocket, you know? And they're the ones really going to, you know, push for this kind of like galactic kind of jump. But before that, we see like kind of clips of the World War II, and despite it being in World War, you have like people going around with rifles, but they have pretty much, there's always one Pokemon accompanying every human, you know, kind of in war. And these are like more hardened Pokemon than we've seen in, say, like
the animated TV show.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like maybe Pokemon have been bred so much that now they're the cutesy versions we see today. But these ones like are like Machamps and are hardened versions of like Feraligatrs and things like that. But they look far meaner and far tougher, you know. So each kind of like human being has a Pokemon and they're fighting alongside with. So you see a few clips of a kind of what a war would look like with humans and Pokemon fighting at the same time, and it's awful and lots of murder and destruction and everything like that. But while that's going on, you have the scientists in the lab and they're tinkering away, and in order to get to the moon, they're like, we don't have enough room in the spaceship, so we need technology that'll make things smaller, you know. And through that, they invent the very first Pokeball by complete accident. You know, all they're trying to do is shrink things to make space for more things. That's the concept. But by true unanimous success, they realize that, wait, we can't just shrink objects. This works on living things, you know? It won't work on people. Ah, what are we going to do? Blah, 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 blah. But lo and behold, it works on Pokemon. And everyone's celebrating like it's the turn of the century. We've got the greatest thing ever. But then, lo and behold, it leads to mass murder, where like people are just launching Pokeballs like hundreds, thousands of feet into the air, and they just use Pokemon to completely wipe out the world type thing, where we're getting to a stage where there's no longer one human per Pokemon. Now you can send hundreds in Pokeballs at your enemy, and it is just chaos. Like, it is dark as fuck. You're just seeing like long range torpedoes, but they're just Pokeballs being thrown, you know, like by like catapult or whatever, like a missile, and they're just waving in, just spreading around surrounding cities, and then just absolute devastation. And then it cuts back to the scientists, you know, just being like, we did it, clink, with their glass, thinking that they've done something amazing for the world.
It's actually something horrible,
but it's the reverse of that.
I love that. And I love that would take a funny turn, because, you know, with like the way I see that, oh, that's a clever idea, because the way I see that is like Pokemon from, you know, from whatever countries, they want, they're part of this war as well, so they'll fight with their humans, do you know what I mean, their human counterparts, and go to war as well. But the moment of the invention of the Pokeball, it almost becomes like slavery.
That the bond of human and Pokemon is gone.
Gone. It's all about ownership.
It's all about ownership from that point on. And just like, and obviously thousands of years later, the Pokemon world we know today comes out of that, but it had a dark past.
Origin.
Yeah,
I love it.
And I just love the idea of that. And it's Team Rocket who are trying to go to space that created the thing. So it's an alternate worlds type of origin story.
I love it.
One I get behind.
Yeah, it's because you and me have always said, and I've said this podcast so many times before, I've always been itching for a mature, older, darker Pokemon story, because there's so much there. But that would be,
I mean, those
amazing.
Power word motherfuckers just giving the Pokemon guns and going, oh, there you go, like, that's a fucking terrible idea, and they should be sued for every cent they have. Whereas what I'm talking about here, that could be
a good original story.
Thing to
do. Absolutely, I love that one's really good. I have, this one's kind of straightforward. It's not overly complicated, but Time Splitters, have you ever played any of the Time Splitters games?
I played Time Splitters 2 just because it was the Goldeneye creators.
Yeah, so funny enough, Time Splitters 2 would be the one that I'm basing it off. So again, just to give people a little bit of synopsis, in Time Splitters 2, Sergeant Cortez and Corporal Hart are sent to the space station, which has been overrun by Time Splitters. This is just the premise for my story, right?
Nice.
In order to protect the Time Crystals, the Time Splitters take 9 crystals and hide them throughout time. Cortez and Hart manage to take hold of the Time Portal Room, and during which Cortez leaps through the portal and into other times and places in order to regain the crystals to take back the space station. So it would literally be a mini series where each episode is where they go to the various parts of time in a funny animation. This would be humorous, like this wouldn't be serious, this would be like
nice.
A bit
gone comedy with this one,
tongue in cheek. Yeah, so like they go like to Siberia in 1990, Chicago in the 30s, the Wild West in the 1850s. Like these would all be different episodes, like exploring Aztec ruins in the 1920s. But it would all be like anytime they jump through the portal, much like Time Splitters, they become two different characters because they have to like blend in because they don't want to disrupt, you know, time or whatever else. And it's just about them going in like a funny kind of Indiana Jones, you know, slapstick comedy thing where they just have to get these crystals and they end up in the Wild West and they're cowboys and there's like, you know, there's a Clint Eastwood kind of character being, you know, in all those kind of things. And I think it would just be done in that kind of amazing kind of CGI that you get. It would just be a fun, and each time period could be done kind
of like a Quantum Leap kind of episode type thing,
essentially. Yeah but with the kind of, because I mean Time Splitters 2 was a great game but had that kind of a bit of humor about it, and I wouldn't, you know, like Jack
it
and Dexter,
the art style lends itself
exactly.
to that kind of humor,
and I kind of stick
almost
to
like Borderlands
like
or something.
Yes. Yeah. So whereas, you know, Jack and Dexter would be a dark story because what I'm used to from Jack and Dexter is this happy thing. I'd like to keep Time Splitters in the kind of vein that it's in, where it literally could be a mini series where each episode that you get with them is like 6-7 minutes long. It's them jumping through a portal. They're 1930s Chicago. There's the Time Splitter. We've got to go get the crystal, and you got like a couple of minutes worth of hijinks, you know, taking place while they're trying to get them. Like, you know, just something kind of a bit easy. But I was talking to Luke recently about Time Splitters, and I miss it. It's one of those games like you had with F-Zero that I was like, I'd love this to get some kind of revival. Yeah. You know, and I think that might be the way to go. Do you have any more ideas?
How are we on time?
We're pretty much there, I think, you know. If you're, yeah, we're pretty much good.
Yeah, I'll save them for another time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
We could do a whole post show about like what our episodes.
I know, I definitely could, like, because some of them I just came in with in a few minutes, but I'm like, man, that's such a room for thought idea. Like, you know, I'd love to develop a few of them.
Yeah. I mean, because like, when I was looking at the Jack and Axe one, like, when you envision these things in your head, I'm like, God, that could be such a cool, sad, dark story of one of my favorite video game characters from my childhood. You know, like, oh, so much to do there. If only I had millions, Craig, that I could put into these studios. So that's the episode. There are still 9 episodes of Secret Levels that we haven't watched. I think my recommendation, yours, Craig, is to get on that shit. It looks great.
Yeah, I enjoyed every one of them. Yeah. There wasn't a single dud, like, you know.
And what's amazing is as of today, I think, or yesterday, the news came out that they have gotten the green light for a season 2. So I'm interested to see, which is why we kind of did
that's,
this little...
That's great, because I'd say more developers will be keen to get involved, you know, so
get
maybe,
their IPs
maybe
back
the,
up there.
The IPs will grow.
And it's interesting because the Pac-Man episode being so wild actually led into the fact that there was a Pac-Man announcement of the same style of game being released.
Yeah,
so I'm like,
so already it's had an
people could use it as a good kind of like announcement trailer almost of the new game. So I think there could be a few good things in there. But yeah, that's it from us for today. This is the last episode we'll actually record before Christmas. So to our listeners, I hope you guys have a lovely, nice Christmas where you got plenty of time to play video games and sit back and relax. Again, the schedule for next week will be a couple of our post shows. Will be released throughout next week. Might do 3 or 4 or something like that to be for your leisure and listening. And if you like what you hear, there's loads more patreon.com/giftofgame. You can check it out there. We will return back in January for our December news episode once Chris has returned from Canada, because he's gone back to the Great White North. But yeah, so until then, Craig, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course,
that was fun. I hope you have a lovely Christmas with lots of gaming. And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.